Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
An Erio's original.
With anti-Asian hate crimes at record numbers, this season of The Margaret Cho, we're examining the historical crimes that laid the groundwork for this recent onslaught of violence. I talk with Asian comedians, authors, journalists, podcasters, as well as the organizations and people working to stop Asian hate. Welcome to The Margaret Cho, Mortal Minority. Today, we're talking about Andrew Tsai, a 19-year-old college student who killed his sister's fiancé at her behest in 1993. Also, we cover the horrific recent event where an 89-year-old grandmother was set on fire in Brooklyn. My guest today is Kristen Meinzer. Kristen is the producer and host of the podcast By the Book, as well as the co-author of How to Be Fine, What We Learn by Living by the Rules of 50 Self-Help Books. Hi, Kristen. How are you feeling? How are you feeling with everything going on?
Oh, you know, it's a crazy, crazy world we live in. But, you know, I always say to people who are kind enough to check in on me, the racism isn't new, but maybe the uptick in violence is new, or the uptick in reporting the violence is new. Mm-hmm. But the racism, that's not new. That's always been there. That's part of America.
Absolutely. It's always been there. And it's a big part of who we are as a nation. And it's something that we need to deal with. And I've been really enjoying your coverage of Meghan Markle. And I think that actually this kind of touches on her, and you're working around her and talking about her, is that when we're not actually going to talk about black or white, then everybody who is not in that particular conversation about race is somehow left out of it. And with Meghan, it's really these invisible elements of biracial identity where people can, I feel like the royal family, I don't know anything about them, of course, but I feel like some of the members are like openly racist just because they don't see her blackness. But they acknowledge it. They know that she's black, and so it's just the idea of her blackness, but they almost don't see it, I think.
I think it's because they're oblivious when it comes to matters of race. I mean, this is a family that is incredibly white, that mm-hmm. cares about bloodlines so deeply that they've been mostly marrying their cousins for a very long time.
Right.
And that their love of the bloodline is so great that you can actually inherit the monarchy through blood. I mean, I just think they have a lot of screwed up ideas about where power comes from, mm-hmm. what that has to do with race, the fear of acknowledging that race is ever involved, their colonial history. Let's not forget that 2/3 of the Commonwealth is not white, these countries that they put their flag into. So, you know, they've had a long, complicated history with race long before Meghan ever came into the picture. And because of that, I think they don't know how to deal with it. And they have always had the unspoken model of never complain, never explain. But we all know that when it comes to issues of justice like racism, we should complain. We shouldn't stay quiet. Right. And in the past, they would always stay quiet on certain matters because they were about, you know, a skirt length or a color worn to an event. Yes. And that is nowhere near the same thing as dealing with racism.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that Archie is not extended the monarchy is the most racist part of it, that he is not privileged to all of the things that go along with being prince, even though he is the rightful heir. I mean, he is the direct heir.
Well, he's not the direct heir, but he is in the top 10 in line.
He is, yes.
He is the grandchild of the future king. He is, you know, who knows how much longer the queen, I mean, she's in her mid-90s. We don't know how much longer we'll have the queen. Any minute now, Charles could be the king, and this is the king's grandchild.
And at least should be royal protections should be available to them. The kinds of things that really the rest of the royal family take for granted, I imagine, you know, but it's, to me, it's just, I'm really fond of Meghan Markle, and I'm really fond of her journey and her ability to speak the truth of it, because it must be so intimidating.
Oh, absolutely. And I just think that they hit the jackpot when they got her. They were so lucky to find somebody who actually studied international relations, who actually had a history of being an outspoken feminist and an anti-racist, because that reflected well on them and modernized the family in so many ways. And she already was so good at the PR, at the waving, at the red carpet. Yeah. She was good at all of these things that royals have to do all the time. Mm-hmm. They should have embraced her. They should have protected her, and they just didn't do it.
It's really an outrage. And I always find real kinship with people who are biracial, because I think that there's something to that, in that when race is sort of like weighed by degrees, Asian Americans are often kind of judged in the same way as people who are biracial, in that you're almost white. You're kind of
but
white.
We're not.
But we're not. We're not in any way.
Yes.
But it's a weird outlook about race. And it's another kind of way that racism affects us, in a way that's very negative. And in that you have to sort of be assigned this identity in the hierarchy of what racism is. And when truth, we're all affected by it in different ways. We're all traumatized by it in different ways. But a lot of times,
even white people, and I think white people forget that they're affected and traumatized by racism too.
Exactly. They always forget. Mm-hmm. They always forget. And also the idea of when you're Asian, you can say something, like the Sari Kim, who is the Korean-American Republican, I think would be senator, she's not senator, in Texas.
Texas, yes.
Who said that she didn't want Chinese immigrants here. And I can say that because I'm Korean. And it's like, no, bitch, you can't say that because that's racist.
Yeah, it's still racist. It's still racist. And just because you're a person of color doesn't give you a free pass to be racist. And also, I just have to say, you know, whenever a person of color aligns themselves with white supremacy, I understand why they do it. You know, for the same reason that white women align themselves oftentimes with Republican policymakers who are going to not necessarily advocate for women and probably are going to try to pass laws to make life harder for you as a woman. But I think people often want to be, you know, in proximity to power. And it's heartbreaking when people of color fall for that. I understand why they do. I totally understand. When I face racism, when I face, you know, microaggressions, when I face any of those things, it hurts very badly. And I understand the desire to get away from that. And I'm guessing those folks, that's what they're trying to do, is get away from that with proximity to power in some way or another. But it just makes me so angry.
It makes me so angry. A kind of rage that's only reserved for our own.
Exactly. Like, come on.
Specific.
You're reflecting badly on all of us. You're bringing all of us down by doing this.
Cut it out.
Please. Yeah.
It's really, I mean, to me, it's just, it's so sad. And there's a lot there. But I'm really glad that we get to do this in this podcast, is talk about race and talk about the uncomfortable things, but in a way that we can really change everything. And so what I want to do is bring up, this is the first subject we'll talk about, is the 89-year-old grandmother set on fire in Brooklyn. Now, this is a very This sticks in my mind because this was one of the first incidents that really made me realize that we were escalating into this period of violence against Asians, that it was beyond just trolling online. It was just going beyond Trump saying Kung Flu or China virus or whatever, that this is now stepping into a very bad situation. Do you know about this case?
Yes. I live in Brooklyn. This happened a few neighborhoods away from me. It's not in my neighborhood, but it was definitely here in Brooklyn. And, you know, this is an elderly woman who walks with a cane, who just stepped out of her own house onto the sidewalk. And nobody deserves that. You know, it doesn't matter if she used a cane or not. It doesn't matter if she was elderly or not. Nobody deserves that. But yeah, that was just, it was horrible. And it got a lot of headlines here in New York.
It got and it really made people wake up and really get into sort of trying to figure out how we can stop this. And so this is from ABC 7 News. Two 13-year-old boys are under arrest for allegedly setting an 89-year-old woman on fire in Brooklyn. The victim said the pair never spoke a word to her before slapping her in the face and setting her clothes ablaze on the night of July 14th, 2020 in Bensonhurst. The victim told Eyewitness News she had just left her home when the two approached her near 16th Avenue and 77th Street. She said one of them struck her in the face, and then moments later, she felt a sharp pain on her back. Once she realized what was happening, she quickly pulled up her hair so it wouldn't burn and then rubbed her back against the wall to put out the flames. I saw the video of this, and it's just like your grandma, like, I mean, she's 89. It's so unbelievable and terrible. AM New York said the attack and the NYPD's decision not to investigate it as a hate crime. Not to! Sparked outrage within the Asian American community, said actor William Lexham, who organized the march with China Mac. Police said it wasn't a hate crime because there was no racial slurs that were said, Ham said. The woman doesn't even speak English, so how could she know this was an unprovoked attack? Ham, China Mac, and their mutual friend banded together to organize the August 1st protest called the hashtag They Can't Burn Us All March, which was promoted on social media by stars such as actress Awkwafina and rapper MC Jin. The demonstration, which drew supporters as far as Philadelphia, began at Shondlow Playground at 1 p.m. Speakers, including China Mac, MC Jin, and the borough president Eric Adams, blasted the attack on the elderly woman and reaffirmed their support for Bensonhurst's Asian community. We are not here to march against white people, black people, Italian people, Spanish people, said China Mac at the rally. We're here to march against racism. This is not a race war. And that, you know, there's so much rage sometimes that's unfocused. And who do we target? Like, how does it come out? Where do we point it at? We don't point it at white supremacy, which is really the reason for all of this. We pointed at each other or other minorities.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, when one minority attacks another minority, I hate it when people say, oh, this is proof that Asians hate black people or black people hate Asian people or Latinos hate, you know, whatever that is. I think that's not proof of that at all. It's proof of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you're saying, Margaret. This is a symptom of a much bigger, uglier issue. And, you know, we can't forget things like the model minority myth. You know who came up with that myth? A white person. You know, the idea of what kind of minorities are being the right kinds of Americans, which ones are not causing too much of a fuss, which ones are being compliant, which ones are being quiet, which ones aren't reporting things that are bad that happened to them. And we know that's what a model minority is, but that's, you know, also completely made up. And it is not made up to make white people feel better. It is.
No.
Yeah. This is very something specific to judging certain kinds of minorities and ranking them against each other.
Right. And it's the model minority myth was actually brought forth in direct opposition to the civil rights movement.
Yes.
So it was like trying to show black people who are marching for their civil rights, you know, don't be like that. Be like this. You know, it was showing like, oh, there's ways to be a minority that's not causing problems for the majority. And that's not a way to make a country. And if we're going to get really truthful, you're also not supposed to be here either. White people are not the original inhabitants of America. This is all indigenous land that we're all on. And the fact of the matter is that we don't even know how many people died in the colonization of the United States. And so they can't feel like a serious sense of ownership when they were really only here very shortly before we were.
That's absolutely true. And just to go back to the idea of pitting people of color against each other, I mean, the fact of the matter is that in the civil rights movement, marching right alongside Black people were Asian people. There were people like Grace Lee Boggs on the front lines. And in a study that was done by Pew Research last year, back in September, they found that 69% of Asian Americans aligned themselves with Black Lives Matter. They fully supported Black Lives Matter compared to only 55% of the general population. So this myth that's pitting us all against each other, it is malarkey.
Yeah.
Asian people and Black people have been helping each other and believing each other and fighting for each other's rights all along. And we don't need to be pit against each other. That's not the way we are in real life.
No, and it keeps us separated and it keeps them in power, which is really, really important. And I'm so excited to share with you the historical case that we're going to talk about today. This case is a little bit different from the ones we've covered. I had a little bit of, this sounds weird. I had a little bit of like so much anger around the repetitive nature of the hate crimes that I was covering that I had to break free, because I'll often see myself as a victim in this, and I'm afraid to go outside because I'm an older Asian American woman in the target range of, I'm 52.
Really?
Yes.
I need your lotion. Whatever you're doing, you're looking great.
I use microcurrents. It's all microcurrents. It's actually all electricity based. It's not really a product. I'll show you. It's my whole thing. Thank you. But I, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to get killed. I'm just out here. All I'm trying to do is get those little Nas new Nike shoes with the blood on them. But since I'm an older Asian woman, I could probably just use my own blood because I'll get killed if I go outside. I think it's just really scary to go out, and I just get very like, I was reading about it too much. So this is actually a terrible case also, but it's terrible in a different way. So I want to get into it with you. And okay, so we are going to take a quick break, and then we are going to dive into the story of the Suz.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We are back. So I had a couple of different sources for this case. The Chicago Tribune and article about that. I also listen to a podcast called It's About Crime covering this case. I also watched a movie called House of Sa, which goes into great detail. Also, people looking to grant Andrew Sa clemency around this case. And it was it's very 90s. Do you know about the Sas?
Yes, a brother and a sister.
Yes.
Who arranged for the murder of her boyfriend. And
yes.
They were Korean American immigrants.
Yes. So this is the story. So I in my mind, I call it the Nuna murder, because it's like if you're a Nuna, it's like it's very gendered. But if you're a Nuna means you're the younger brother of an older sister, and you're Nuna. So she is your Nuna. And if you are told to do something by your Nuna, you have to do it. Like, and it doesn't have to be a relation necessarily. They called Beyonce in Korea Yonse Nuna, because she is like Korea's Nuna.
Oh, this is really useful for me, because I'm not sure if you know this, Margaret, but I'm adopted. So I was raised in a family that was mostly white. And so I don't know a lot of these cultural things like this. So you just taught me something.
Oh, good. Yes. Well, so Beyonce Nuna is your Nuna, even if you're not a young boy. Even if you're not that age to be a young boy or to be an older boy or a woman or a girl, you know, she's going, if you're non-binary, whatever, you're still going to have Beyonce can be your Nuna, because Beyonce transcends all of those labels. She's the world's Nuna, and in particular, Korea's Nuna. Beyonce. They don't even say Beyonce. They say Yonse Nuna.
Oh. Hold on. Are you everybody's Nuna, too?
I'm kind of everybody's Nuna, but I have drifted into Ajumma territory. So now I'm everybody's Ajumma. I think that once they start to be afraid of you, then you become an Ajumma. So Ajumma is like older woman's female power. That can be very warm and loving, but it can also be very frightening.
I aspire to that someday. I want to be
Well, you have to get a perm. And you have to get elastic waist pants. And then
I'm ready.
Be an Ajumma. I'm so ready. So the case is, okay, from the Chicago Tribune, it was 23 years ago that Andrew Suff fatally shot his sister's boyfriend, ending the life of a man who helped raise him while forever altering his own. At the time, the then 19-year-old Chicago man was the last great hope of an immigrant Korean family with old world values and a pained history. So the family, they're really so Korean in all of my studies about them. The father, I don't know what his Korean name is, but they called themselves Ronald and Elizabeth. So they were in their 20s and they were living in Korea. And they had an older son, Byung. And Byung, I think his name is Byung-un. Byung-un is also my mom's younger brother's name. Byung-un was a very playful kid. And Byung-un was on the rooftop of their apartment building and was playing when he was 9 years old, just running around playing, and fell off the rooftop. And he was brain dead. You know, of course, in sons in Korean culture, it's like your son, your firstborn son, is the most precious aspect of your family. There is nobody more important than the firstborn son. The father, of course, but the father sort of gives all of his power over to the firstborn son. So they were incredibly depressed by this. Catherine, who is the younger sister and the Nuna of the story, Catherine, who was, I think, 7 at the time, was not there, was not present at the accident, but pretty much from the father received the blame for this tragic event. So the parents were told, well, he's brain dead and we could keep him on the life support, but if we don't, he'll die. But if we keep him on, he may somehow regain some consciousness, but he's always going to have diminished brain activity and diminished abilities. So in Korea at the time, you know, they just not thinking about whether they can save his life. In their mind, he's already dead. And so they released the, machines, released him from the machines, and he passed away. So the blame against Catherine, the daughter, took form in a lot of different ways. I mean, so a lot of times when you're the kids in a Korean family, especially if you move to America, you become the parents' mouthpiece because they can't speak English as well. So I was like that sort of person. I don't have an older sibling, but with my parents, I was always their legal representation. You know, like if they had a phone call, I would have to answer the phone. Mm-hmm. Or if they had to make an appointment somewhere, I would do it. And so I was really talking to everybody for my family. But Catherine took on that position. But Ronald, the father, would just not stop finding fault in Catherine, no matter what it was. Because in his mind, it was because he had a daughter. And the fact that he had a daughter was such bad luck that his son was taken from him. And so the blame was constantly put on the daughter. And then the mother, you better give me another son. And the mother, Elizabeth, was in her 40s already and kind of I don't know. I'm not sure if I can have another son. But she started taking all of these experimental fertility drugs and got pregnant with Andrew. So Andrew was born in 1973 and they decided to make a fresh start in America. So they moved to Chicago. They opened a pharmacy and they did fairly well as immigrants. The son was about 11 years old. The entire family were struck by another tragedy in that Ronald was diagnosed with cancer. And so, you know, when I read more about Ronald, there's so much stress that it's I see why, he was just in ill health. And there was a lot of things that he was doing that had set him apart from Catherine. One of the instances was Catherine got a phone call from a boy who seemed to be Latino, as far as Ronald could assess from the phone. And, you know, Catherine's probably in her early teens, maybe 15. And Ronald promptly hung up the phone. He grabbed Catherine and started screaming you're nothing but a whore. My son is dead and you're a whore. And Catherine just wigged out and just started scratching her dad, and he's like bleeding everywhere. And then Ronald, the dad, grabs up a gas can and pours it on Catherine and himself all over, and then gets a lighter. Like, also, this happens a lot in Korean drama. Do you watch Korean dramas?
I have not seen a lot of them, but I have not seen this particular kind of thing in a Korean drama either. I think the ones that I've watched are almost like Disney movies, not like this.
Oh, like Dodo Fa La Sol. Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. I like that. That's cute. Almost all of the really like gritty crime Korean dramas have a gasoline. So it's like some kind of like a gasoline thing. Where they, I mean, it's not funny, but it happens so much that I'm like, I think this is actually like a Korean thing to like set people on fire with gasoline. So the father's like got a lighter, and they're both doused in gasoline, himself and his 15-year-old daughter. And he's screaming, "Kachigaja, let's go together. Kachigaja, kachigaja." So the mom, Elizabeth and Andrew, walk in on this. The dad's like trying to hold Catherine, who's squirming. Oh, they've got gasoline, but he can't light the lighter because he's like trying to hold her and light the lighter while he's covered in gas. And so the mom and Andrew, Elizabeth and Andrew, grab them, pull them apart, get the gas off them. Anyway, so the dad, Ronald, has cancer and he's dying. And Andrew, who is 11 at the time, is such a dutiful son. 좋은 아들, 좋은 아들, is a good boy. He is sitting by the father's bedside, sits there 24 hours a day, and the father's sleeping there. And so Andrew's falling asleep, so he ties a string around his hand and around his dad's hand. So if his dad moves, Andrew will wake up. And so it's that kind of like duty that got him into the Korea Times newspaper. You know, reporters are coming by and look at this, this beautiful son doing this for his dying dad. And so the dad dies. It's horrible. But the mom is kind of left with this pharmacy. She can't pass the pharmacy exam. The mom is really kind of helpless without her husband. And I think she's probably coming from this place of like really like being gaslit, and not with gas, but, you know, literally, but more figuratively, like being told she can't do anything, being told all this stuff her whole life. And then suddenly her kind of abuser, really, is dead. And so she's very hanging on to her kids to sort of an inappropriate degree, in that she can't even write a check by herself. She has to have Andrew do it for her. At that time, Catherine is off kind of doing her own thing. She's like, sort of like removed from the family, and she doesn't really care about what's going on. So since the mom can't pass the pharmacy exam, she buys a dry cleaner and starts a dry cleaning business. And they're working there, and one time, the mom and Andrew are out, and the mom's like, just hypothetically, if we're on a mountain and there's a fire, if you're with your wife and child and me, your mother, and you can only save one person, who do you save? And it's like 11-year-old kid. He's like, I don't know. Maybe I would just, I would stay up here by myself and die, and then you guys all be saved. And she's like, no, you can't do that. And I go, well, I guess I would, I didn't even see, you know, you've lived a long life, so maybe you stay here and die. And then she's like, no, you can't do that. And they're arguing about it. And it's really traumatizing. Andrew's like, I don't even know what to do, because his dad has just died. And he's like, what do I do? I don't. She's like, you have to answer this question. Who do you save? And then he just couldn't come up with an answer. And she said, you have to save me, because you may have women in your life, many women in your life. You may have children in your life, many children in your life, but you only have one mother.
Really healthy.
I think that's it's inappropriate.
Very inappropriate. Oh my God. Yes, very much so. These parents both have issues. Let's be real. Both the parents, there are some issues there.
There are fucked up things going on, and I don't even know what's happening. It's really crazy. When Andrew is 14, the terrible thing happens. His mother is found in the dry cleaners. She's been stabbed 34 times, most of them in her head and face. Some money is stolen. A wallet is stolen. but they have no other leads or nobody can figure out who has done this. And so Catherine comes home with her new boyfriend, Robert Duhane, and they sit Andrew down and they let him know what's going on. Andrew doesn't believe it, but, you know, must believe it. You know, he starts talking to the police and this horrible thing. It's, you know, they've already been through so much. So this is just sort of the latest thing that's happened. So Catherine and Robert stay with Andrew, and they really kind of become his new parents. Catherine is in her early 20s. Andrew is 14. Robert is about 27. So they make shift family, and they're sort of raising this young teenage boy. At one point, Andrew and Catherine get in a big argument, and they start fighting, arguing about something. Oh, I know what it is. This is super weird. Catherine comes home, and she smells perfume. And Andrew's 14. She smells perfume, and she's like, why do I smell perfume? Who's been in this house? What woman has been in this house? Who? And Andrew's like, nobody's been in this house. There's no perfume. She's like, no, you don't bring whores in here. And like screaming, and they're fighting. And Catherine bites him in the ribs, right in the kalbi.
Oh, my God.
In the ribs.
Oh, my God.
And it starts bleeding profusely. And then he just runs out of the house about 4 in the morning when he comes back. And Catherine's calmed down. And they have a talk. They say to each other that you're the only one I have in the world now. Let's be a family. And Andrew says to Catherine, what do you want me to do? Because I don't know what to do anymore. What can I do? And Catherine says, just be a kid. You've never been able to be a child. You know, dad never let you be a child. Mom never let you be a child. I'm going to let you be a child. And the relationship works. They're good. And she starts to raise him. And they're having a happy life. It's a little bit hard. But they have $800,000 left to them by the mother's life insurance policy to live off of. Robert Duhane and Catherine Sa open a nightclub called Club Metropolis in Chicago. It's very 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing pretty well. It's like kind of this fun thing. And they have a sort of like family. It's a little unconventional, but it's kind of working. So Robert and Catherine start having problems. You know, they've all been together about 6 years. Andrew's going off to Loyola to college. And so he's out of the picture, kind of gone a lot. So Catherine starts to reach out crying to Andrew about how Robert is abusing her. He's, you know, going to kill her. She's really scared of him. He is probably responsible for the mother's death. That she's scared because she's pretty sure that Robert either did it or that Robert found somebody to do it. And so this revelation gives Catherine so much power. You know, so she's pretty much kind of like forcing this narrative onto Andrew, like, you got to protect me. You know, you've got to protect me. You know, he killed Mom. What are you going to do? He killed Mom. Like, she keeps bringing that up. He killed Mom. During this whole time, she's filing out a life insurance policy for Robert for $250,000.
Mm.
So Andrew comes home on an afternoon, waits in their garage for 4 hours. And when Robert comes in, he shoots him twice, once in the head and once in the neck, and then goes back to the airport. Police apprehend him in Dallas because they think he's a drug dealer. But actually, when they search through his stuff, they find Robert's wallet. They've been searching for him. So they bring him back to Chicago and they're put on trial. Catherine and Andrew are put on trial for the murder of Robert Duhane. And this whole time, Catherine had been acting like this dutiful widow. She'd been acting like, I mean, they weren't married, but they were sort of, I guess, common law in a sense. Mm-hmm. She's just destroyed. She's going with the Duhane family to visit Robert in the cemetery. And her mother is also in the same cemetery. And Catherine goes up to the gravestone of Robert and is like crying, inconsolable. Like, I've lost my boo-boo, like baby talking to the grave. And then does the same thing to the mom's grave, baby talking and like no way to console her, screaming, crying, wailing. And then the father's grave, Ronald's is right next to her. She looks at it, she just goes, oh. And at that point, the family of Robert Duhane were like, that's kind of weird that she's completely over the top crazy about Robert and the mom and then nothing about the father. So they note that, And so when Andrew's arrested and is brought back to Chicago for the murder, they realize, oh, they had a plot to kill Robert. So the day of the trial happens, and Andrew's there, and Catherine is not. Catherine doesn't show up to court. She's just gone and leaves Andrew there to take the blame for everything. Andrew's 19, kind of confused, but also confessed to everything. Catherine is on the run and gone. Is gone for about 3 years. Andrew takes the rap for all of it. He is given 100 years for the murder, which is reduced to 80 years. And Catherine is resuming identities. She moves to Honolulu. There's an America's Most Wanted episode about her. When there's an America's Most Wanted, then she turns herself in. She'd been living under a number of assumed names. I think one of them is Tiffany Escada.
Love it. Love it. So Dateline NBC.
Tiffany Escada. And when she's in Hawaii, in Honolulu, she turns herself in. And the arrest video is really interesting because she looks really, really messed up. And she has no shoes on, but still gorgeous. There's something about her that is like definitely a survivor. You know, there's a strength that you see, but I could just see this also like real sort of righteous anger there. Like, I did this because I deserved it. There's something about it that I really recognize in myself. I'm like, oh God, I could totally see being so angry. There's a kind of Korean rage that happens in women sometimes that just come. Do you ever have that Korean rage?
Oh yeah. I believe in revenge, and I don't think forgiveness is, I think it's overrated. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah,
I
forgiveness agree. Is so overrated, especially in our great American culture of betterment. It's like, you know what? Some shit doesn't deserve to be forgiven. You can just sit and feel bad about this forever because what you did is unforgivable. Just live with the misery of it. Yeah. And your self-recrimination and your sense of guilt, let that eat you up forever as you look in the mirror each day and know how horrible you are. I don't need
right.
to forgive you. Yeah.
I love that. I think that's right. I think that there is an element of self-forgiveness for
oh, yeah,
like
that's different,
you know,
like, yeah we have to do what we have to do for ourselves and to mm-hmm. you know, to continue to wake up each day and do the best we can. We have to do what we have to do, but do I have to do that for you? No You can do that for yourself if you want.
Exactly. Like, I definitely like forgive myself for being victimized. Like, I have to like go through a lot of forgiveness for myself for being in things that I shouldn't have been. And but then I love my own anger. I don't feel like it's corrosive, because I do try to get like some ways to let it out. But you can see it in Catherine, just the rate, Tanya Escada or Tiffany Escada.
Yes.
All of the different identities. And she's so beautiful, you know, and she's just so like perfectly late 80s, early 90s Asian beauty, you know, like Miss Teen Hawaii, you know, that kind of perfect look of she reminds
maybe the
me a little
eyebrows
bit of
are
Kelly
plucked
Hu.
Just a little bit too much by today's standards, but back then those eyebrows were on point.
That's what we wanted back then. That's what we wanted, to have shaved eyebrows. Some people would shave them.
Oh God, I'm so glad we're past that.
I know, I'm so glad, because I used to have like very thick, like a Brooke Shields brow, which was great in the 80s. And then in the 90s, it was all wrong.
Yeah. Those brows, they changed very quickly.
Yeah. So you had to pluck them and pluck them, and they didn't come back. I was too aggressive in plucking. But Catherine was also given life in prison when she returned. They made a TV movie of the incident, but they didn't use Asian people.
What?
Christy Swanson plays Catherine Tsai.
Shut up. Really?
Yeah, and the Andrew is played by an actor. I don't know his name, but he was on Baywatch. He's a white actor.
That makes me so mad.
Isn't that horrifying? The part of that story that is so fascinating is that it kind of comes a lot from the misogynistic patriarchy of Korea, the toxic masculinity that exists in Korea. This is really part of the real villainy of the story, because you see the damage. They erased it all and made it about
Hollywood loves to erase a person of color. They love to do that.
And fill in Christy Swanson. I mean, you know, I original Buffy, of course.
And the one who Ducky thought was so pretty at the end of Pretty in Pink, let's not forget.
Oh, yes. I did a movie with her in the early 90s. Oh, God. It was Control Room. It was like the time for a minute where air traffic controllers were really chic. I can't remember the name of it. It was like Control Room or... There was a bunch of movies just about air traffic control rooms. And it was like all in one room, like a Glengarry Glen Ross, all in one room, acting tour de force with me and Robert Sean Leonard and Christy Swanson.
Oh, my God.
He's great.
I need to look this up because I need to watch this.
Yeah, it's really funny. But what's really also funny is that I lost my voice during the filming. So I had to go back and dub the whole thing. So it's a little bit off. So it looks a little bit like one of those, Michelle Yeoh, like early martial arts movies. Because I'm a little bit off.
Yes.
But so I did a movie with Christy Swanson and she did food combining where she would only eat proteins or only eat carbohydrates at each meal.
You can't have both together?
No.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. It's so sad. It's like the life of a 90s actress. Too much. Too much to do. Too much to remember. So yeah, they made a movie about it. Andrews is appealing for clemency. He is now 47. He's been in prison for a long time. About 27 years. 27 years. 26 years. And about 5 years ago, he reached out to Catherine because their prisons are not far from each other and said, hey, you know, I really would love to talk to you. I miss you and we're family and you're still all I have. And she wrote back and said, I don't know you. I don't have a brother. Don't ever try to speak to me again. And it's really sad. Mm. Anuna shouldn't do that. So, you know, she has crossed off the Nuna list.
That is so sad. Oh, I feel bad for both of them, though, Margaret.
I feel bad for both of them.
Like, Catherine sounds like she got dealt a shit hand, too. Like, really bad. Yeah. And I don't want to ever in any way suggest that I'm blaming the victim here, but my understanding is her boyfriend, he started dating her when she was barely legal. Like, she was 18 and he was 25 or 27 or whatever at the time when he started dating her. And it's like...
Yeah, he's older, yeah.
That doesn't sound like necessarily a relationship of equals... too. And I don't know. I just feel like she had a lot of things that were not right in her life. And I don't want to blame the victim. I don't know that much about her boyfriend, but I do know that he was quite a bit older and unemployed and so on when he met her. And I think what 18-year-old girl should have to take that on too.
Right. You know? I think she's just doing what she can. And then also it's the misogyny of the time where they like to frame characters in these historical archetypes, like the teen villain, the teen femme fatale. Mm-hmm. And femme fatale, it's like women will kill you. Women are deadly. And they're
Poison
born
Ivy,
bad.
Amy Fisher, Poison. All that stuff. Yeah.
She fits into those archetypes of these children, girl children, who were treated as hardened criminals when really they're just trying to get by.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do feel for her. I'm not saying... anything she did was right, but I do feel bad for the hand that she was dealt and what she, you know, what she was dealing with. I feel bad. And I obviously feel bad for Andrew. He was only a teenager when all this went down. Oh,
he was
God.
A kid and he was told that, you know, this man killed your mother. And also kind of bearing the burden of the entire family of like the death of the older brother, the death of the father, the death of the mother, and all of the inappropriateness that went along with all of those deaths that really scarred him and really made him rely on his Nuna, who was also scarred by all of the things that she had gone through. It's just unhappy for all. I do hope that Andrew Saw does receive clemency. I know that it's still up to the judge and nobody really knows, but he's been there a long time. He's very handsome. he's married. I see a ring on his finger. So he's got married in prison. It's very interesting. And they were such a beautiful, you know, the beautiful Korean-American kids. You know, you see their pictures in the 80s and they're at like Korean camp or Korean school. I don't know if they did any of that, but they're just beautiful. And so that is the story of the Nuna murder, the sus.
And I know that as far as clemency is concerned, I know that the victim's family is not fighting it. They're not advocating for it, but they're not fighting it either. They're,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So I think they also see that he wasn't just a ruthless killer. I think they see there was more to this story.
Yeah, there's a lot more. And there's so much more to our story as Asian Americans. You know, there's so much to tell. And the rich history of this has really been fascinating to unpack. And thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find you, all your wonderful coverage on all things royalty based in the new royals, the real royals, the best royals?
Yes. Well, Megan, you can find me on Twitter at Kristen Meinzer, and I have a few podcasts you can listen to. My Royals one is called When Meghan Met Harry, a Royal Wedding Cast. We mostly folded that one and have only put out a few bonus episodes in the last few years because it was mostly about the lead up to the wedding, and my co-host and I went to the wedding also. That was the original episode was us at the wedding.
So incredible.
Oh, it was so great. The best day of our lives. I also host a show called By the Book with Jolenta Greenberg. And it's a comedy show where Jolenta and I, for the last 5 years, choose a different self-help book every other week. We live by the rules and we record ourselves so you can hear how each book enhances and destroys our lives and our marriages. It's like a reality show in audio form. And then the third show that if you would like to check out, if you love movies, if you love Margaret Cho, because Margaret, we've actually recommended movies that you're in. So on Movie Therapy, people write or call in with their life issues. It's like a Dear Abby sort of show. And we give some advice, and then we prescribe them a movie and a TV show to watch to help them through whatever ails them. So that's called Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, everybody listen. I'm going to listen.
Yep. And I kid you not, we have definitely prescribed movies and TV shows with you in them.
It's so fabulous. Well, I'm so honored. Well, thank you. And thank you so much for joining me today. And I'm so excited that we got to do this.
Thank you so much, Margaret.
Thank you. Today we are highlighting Heart of Dinner, an organization that's combating food insecurity and isolation within New York City's elderly Asian American community. They deliver care packages to Asian elders and handwritten notes in Chinese or Korean. Volunteer or donate at heartofdinner.org. We will link to them in our show notes. If you want to support our show, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts, and spread the word. Reach out to me on Twitter with your thoughts, at Margaret Cho, or at Instagram, at Margaret_Cho. The Margaret Cho is produced by the Irios Network.
Irios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.